WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
It's something simple, the street we live on, but its name can have deep, hurtful roots.
Jefferson Davis, he was not kind to black people.
That's being very kind to him, right? He hated black folks.
Now Charlotte is changing street names, but what goes into that process? This is WBTV's Good Question. Thanks for listening to WBTV's Good Question podcast. I'm Jamie Bowl. Alex off this week, so we're bringing you a special edition of Good Question. It's a spin on another WBTV franchise, Community Conversation. For years, WBTV has been bringing you Community Conversation specials. It's about having meaningful dialogue on important topics in our community. But we want to bring you those important topics more often, so we've recently launched our Community Conversation series hosted by Dedrick Russell. Our first topic, street names. The city has been working to rename some of Charlotte's streets. Back in February, Charlotte City Council unanimously approved to rename 9 Charlotte streets named after leaders of the Confederacy and white supremacists. The first street on the list was Jefferson Davis Street. It has been renamed Druid Hills Way. So what goes into changing a street name, and how much can this change lives? Here's Dedrick's full conversation with Charlotte City Councilman Malcolm Graham and community advocate Melissa Gaston.
I'm Melissa Gaston, the Executive Director for the North End Community Coalition.
And you, sir?
And I'm Malcolm Graham, a member of the Charlotte City Council representing District 2, and I'm also chairman of the Great Neighborhoods Committee, which is responsible for the street name changes that was offered by the Legacy Commission.
And Councilmember Graham, tell me, how important or significant changing this name, Jefferson Davis Street, to Druid Hills Way? How significant and important is that?
I think it's historic, right? I think we have a moral obligation, yet a responsibility, to be true to where we are in our country. And certainly, hatred, racism, and discrimination has no place in a civil society. The men that we honor did everything they could to ensure that many of the people who live on that street didn't have any civil rights, didn't have any equal opportunity, didn't have any means to support themselves. And so it's really fitting and important as a progressive city like Charlotte, North Carolina, that we take steps necessary to correct a wrong. It was wrong to honor Confederate soldiers, individuals who lost the war. Where else do we honor losers and give them a prominent place in our community, especially on a street that houses African Americans, those who have bled and those who have strived to try to be seen as equal? I think it's really significant, and I'm so proud of the Charlotte City Council, the Legacy Commission, not only in changing Jefferson Davis, but changing maybe 12 other streets in the city of Charlotte all within the next year.
Yeah, and Jefferson Davis, he was not kind to black people.
That's being very kind to him, right? He hated black folks, right? It was hatred, racism, discrimination, denied opportunities, economic opportunities, denied the opportunity to worship, denied opportunities to be a family, denied opportunities to be seen as whole, right? And so why would we honor him? Why would a city like Charlotte, that's progressive in nature, why would our city do that? Why would our state honor those individuals? Why would our country look the other way? So I'm very happy that the residents of Druid Hills Circle now have come to the decision that, yes, they want to control their destiny in terms of where they live and what street they call home and the meaning that means for them and those who come to visit them.
And Ms. Gatson, that's a game changer. You're in the community.
Yes.
And your husband wanted a name change. Right. He did all he could in order to get the name change. Tell me, how significant is that for you and the legacy and the memory of your husband?
Right. For me, it's a significant thing. When they first talked about changing the name of the street, he was all for that. He reached out to owners who didn't still live in Charlotte but had a connection to Jefferson Davis Street because they owned property or had lived there for a significant period. And he, you know, said, this is what's happening. I want you to provide your input. So they did. So it made it so much easier when the city came to change that name to reach out to the property owners who, you know, you may not have known, like Miss Lois, who owns Flowers by Lois. She's a property owner. So we reached out to her and said, hey, you know, they're changing the name of the street because she doesn't live there anymore, but she's still a property owner there. And at some point in time, they had shortened the name from Jefferson Davis in the street sign and then said Jeff Davis, like maybe that made it better. But that didn't change it. We all knew what it meant and who it was honoring, somebody who should not have been honored. So I think with the name change, he would definitely be proud that the name changed. And I'm excited that they chose the name that I put out there. So I think I did it anonymously, but Druid Hills Way was my suggestion. So I was excited that that was the name that the residents and the owners on that street chose, because the residents in Druid Hills, anywhere in the community, they could put their suggestions for street names in. And so I'm sure they had a list and then they whittled it down. And then those were the street names that the residents actually chose.
You know, it's very interesting, you know, when you move to homes and, you know, you just want to get a good deal on a house.
Right.
But you never investigate. I never investigate like the name of the street. Did the residents know when they bought that house there on Jefferson Davis Street, they knew the background?
I don't think that they knew that. It was just a street where they were able to buy a house and they didn't think about the street name or reference that who it was or know who it was or have any meaning. It wasn't until later when people started talking about it and people did research, they're like, oh wait, this is not something that's good. We need to change the street name. And even to this day, right before it changed, some of the residents didn't know who Jefferson Davis was or what it was about. So it was an education process, and I'm sure there was a lot of Googling going on to find out exactly who he was and what he meant. And then when I told people about it, they were like, oh, I had no idea, and we can't have that. We need to definitely change it. So I think it was something that was definitely embraced. But you're right, people generally don't research the name of the street where they're moving to. They're just glad that they're able to move to a home and have somewhere to lay their head and be safe.
Yeah. So tell me, so I guess that street has been named like that for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
So why didn't city government, you know, step in sooner rather than later? What do you think motivated the change?
I think current events motivated the change. Going back to Emmanuel Amy Church, where my sister lost her life to a white nationalist, a racist. George Floyd, when he lost his life a year and a half ago. The community began to realize that, listen, we cannot honor those individuals who in modern times will be tried for treason against the country. Those who would step in the way to not allow equal access to a wide variety of opportunities for people of color. And so I think it's just an awakening. And we also have a different generation of leadership, a different time and space, where people now are very conscious about race and they're talking about it. Once upon a time, the issue of race was really a taboo subject, right? You didn't talk about it publicly. You talked about it in church. You talked about it around kitchen tables. Now people are talking about race in public forums because, unfortunately, race and racism still continues to be America's Achilles heels, right? And so the only way you can erase it, do something about it, is to confront it. Everywhere you see it, whether it's on a street, whether it's a flag, whether it's a monument, or whether it's someone at your kitchen table saying something that you know is racist and or denigrates a group of people. And so I think it's just current events that people are saying, listen, it is really time for us to call it what it is. And if America is going to be great, if our city is going to be great, then we have to have the fortitude, the courage to create what I call healthy tension, right? These issues are complicated at best, But they need to be addressed. You cannot just sweep it under the rug. You cannot say or talk about critical race theory, right, on one side, which makes no sense to me at all, right? No one was talking about critical race theory 2 years ago, right? Now everyone's talking about it. And basically it's those individuals who are frustrated that this country demographics are changing. They're changing to be more black and brown and people of color. And so they want to continue to make America great, take our country back. And so I think those individuals who believe in an open society, those who believe in equal access, a level playing field, are now saying, listen, we're going to call it what it is. It's racist, it's racism, and it should be removed from public squares.
Wow. And speaking of confronting and removing, we got a name change. What else do we need to change and confront? Because this moved quickly. What else do you wish moved this quick in order to make lives better for people of color?
Right. There are so many things that can move quickly to make lives better. We need to look at the schools and what they do with the schools here and just how they're different in the schools. If you have a school that's in a primarily African-American community versus a school that's in a white community, and just they're so different. And we don't even realize it, and they think Druid Hills is a prime example. Druid Hills Elementary is a great big school, nice and relatively new. But the teachers that they send to Druid Hills, because it's a Project Lift school, I think they still categorize it that way, the level of teachers that they get there are not the same level of teachers that you get at a Myers Park or Alexander Graham school. So how is that? You want to bring up the level of the education for the students, but you don't because you're not sending the best student, the best teachers there. And not saying anything's wrong, because I give props to anybody who wants to be a teacher, but you don't have the same expectations of the teachers there. So those are the things that we need to look at. We need to look at, you know, just the infrastructure that's in the communities. Look at the park that's there and how long that park has looked like it looked. I'm on the Central Advisory Council for the parks, and so they have a list of all the parks in the area, and the parks that are all in disrepair and need are all in black and brown communities. Why is that? I mean, those are the things that we need to address. It's the streets, and some streets are paved like every year when you drive down. They're like, dang, it's getting paved again, and you have streets here that have potholes and all kinds of things. So those are the things we need to do immediately to bring up so that they're at least equal. On that equal level.
It's systematic racism, yeah. Right? It's embedded in systems.
Yeah.
She's absolutely right. If you live in the right zip code, you go to a great school. You live in the wrong zip code, that school may have challenges. You got political bodies placing artificial barriers that prevent people from voting. So it's embedded in political system. It's embedded in the criminal justice system. If you're black or brown, you get arrested for a small amount of marijuana, you may get an active jail sentence, right? If you're white, you may get probation. It's healthcare. The North Carolina did not approve Medicaid expansion that impacts over 600,000 citizens. Much of those are black and brown individuals, right? So here we are in a COVID-19 national health crisis, and 600,000 folks could have healthcare today if the North Carolina General Assembly just say, yes, we're going to afford them that, not even a luxury, that is a human a right, right? Healthcare is a human right. And so we got to begin to tackle systematic racism, not as visible as a street name, not as visible as someone going into a church and killing nine folks, but each and every day, individuals, people of color, are experiencing racism based on systems that have been in place.
Yeah. So in this Legacy Commission, Dr. Griffin, I guess who was on this commission, said that there were more than 70 city streets named in honor of slavery, slave owners, Confederate veterans, and supporters of white supremacy or romanticized notions of the antebellum South. And also, it writes that that these are important, that the commission member stated that symbols matter. They are important because they communicate who matters, they convey who we are, and what we value. When you hear more than 70 streets in Charlotte named after those type of people, yeah. you know, and we're in 2021.
Right, yeah.
Does that bother you?
It does. It just turns my stomach just to hear that and to know that that exists and we need to change it. And I think we're changing, what, 9 street names? Mm-hmm. So that means we got 61 more to go. So we got a lot of work to do to change those street names. Something that I found ironic is Jefferson Davis. If you go back and look on the deeds, they were only black people could live on that street, but the other streets in Druid Hills, they were only white people could purchase houses there. So it's ironic that they have the street named Jefferson Davis, but that one specifically let the deed that black people, only black people could live on that street, but then the other streets in Druid Hills, they were that black people could not purchase on that street. So just what is that? You know, so I think intentionally when that street was named, they knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing, you know?
And just like when in South Carolina, when they placed the Confederate flag back on the state grounds in the 60s, they know exactly what they were doing, right? Mm-hmm. These are a thumb in people's eyes, saying that notwithstanding the fact that we lost this war, we are still here. Mm-hmm. And those type of sentiments that they believed in still exist through those systems that I talked about earlier.
Wow.
And that's what we're fighting against.
Yeah. Also, found it interesting. There is a legacy of racial discrimination in Charlotte that has denied African Americans and other people of color the opportunities to participate fully in the city's government, civic life, economy, and educational advancement. Vestiges of this legacy are symbolically represented in streets, monuments, and buildings named in honor of slave owners, champions of the Confederacy, and proponents of white supremacy. So do you think that the African Americans, that we need to have more say, have more buy-in when it comes to making decisions that we're going to, the streets that we're going to live on? And, you know, I just want to know, should there be more buy-in from African Americans, or should there be more outlets where African Americans can give their voice?
Yeah, definitely. We need that. We need to be able to provide our voice, to share our thoughts and our ideas and have impact, and stop having people come to you and say, oh, this is what we're going to do for you because we know this is what you want. And it happens all the time, and that's not what you need. You need to be able to have that impact. But one of the things that happens a lot of times when changes are happening and they're having a meeting, the meeting happens during the middle of the day when the people who could participate aren't able to participate because they're at work or they're doing something with their family and it's not available. So then you have those type of meetings where changes are made in the inopportune time. You don't give the opportunity to have it in the evening where other people can participate, or on a Saturday because they're working Monday through Friday. So those are the kind of things that people don't think about, but they have an impact on what kind of input you have as a citizen in the city of Charlotte.
And how did the city go about making sure that they had that impact and that voice when it came to these street names, changing these street names, or, you know, future street names? Yeah.
Well, I credit the mayor. She did it the right way. I wanted to do it overnight, right? But the mayor, in her wisdom, appointed a commission, historians, people who were very familiar with Charlotte's history, citizens, black and white, to study the issue, to make sure that before the council made a decision that we were factual in terms of the history, that we studied the issue and then brought the recommendations forward. And so I think going through that process lasted well over 9 to 10 months, where they really dug deep and did the research that you just read from to make sure that we were on solid footing from a historical perspective, and then recommended the changes that we needed to make. The council embraced it, and certainly I embraced it as the committee chairman.
So what are the financial implications of changing a street name?
Well, some are more complicated than others. Jefferson Davis is relatively small, and so we're changing that one. We're also changing another one off of a Tryon Street that has no one living on it, right? And so that's an easy change. Others will be more complicated, like Stonewall Street or Barringer Drive or Morrison Drive, where there are a lot more residents, a lot more commercial development, et cetera. But that should not dissuade us from going forward and doing it. As the chairman of the committee, I am very bullish on moving forward, and we will. There will be some financial impact, The city has done a great job literally going out in the community, knocking on doors, getting residents impact, making sure that the citizens who live and the businesses who live in those streets are a part of the change, that their voices are heard, that they recommend the names that they think we ought to go to, and they also understand the financial impact directly and indirectly. And so, will there be some financial impact? Sure, but the city is working as hard as we can to mitigate those factors so that it won't be an overdue burden on the businesses as well as the residents that live on those streets.
And with the residents, do they have, I know some people don't use checking accounts anymore, older people still use a check. So do you think that there needs to be some financial help for those residents who live there, that if they have to change the address on the check, I don't know the impact on that. They may have had stationery already done and addresses and things like that. Talk to me about how, you know, how challenging or, you know, impact, a financial impact on a resident.
Yeah, so it's definitely an impact on the resident, but I don't think a lot of people use checks nowadays or even have stationery, those type of things. And even if you have a check and it has the wrong address on it, you can continue to use it until you need to order new checks and you order them with a new name. I do like that the city put out like a one-sheet fact sheet that has all the things that you have to worry about being changed so that you remember everything that needs to be changed. And that, you know, some of the things are taken care of automatically, like your utilities, the water bill, you know, those type of things. But it reminds you, okay, well, you need to change your driver's license. You're going to need to change your bank accounts or your credit cards or those type of things, or, you know, your alumni association, whatever the situation is, to make sure they know. But there's a great sheet that's on the website. It's available so you can kind of go through and check it off. And I think the city did a really good job as well, because they did go door to door. They handed out flyers, they sent out mailers, they had street signs put out there, the yard signs to put out there, so people were aware of the change that was going. They had a community engagement on a Saturday where they got a food truck from Kuzo's Cuisine, and they came out and gave food to the residents in the community who could come out and give street names and give ideas and find out exactly what was going on. So they did it the right way. So I do have to give kudos to the city for doing that, because it was a great way to engage the community, make sure everybody was aware, so somebody can't say, oh, well, they just came and changed that and they didn't tell us and give us any input. It was a thing where the residents were showed that they were valued and that they mattered. So
eight other streets are getting ready to be changed as well, and I guess there's going to be a process on what names they get, correct?
Exactly. The process will follow just as was outlined by Ms. Gaston in terms of every street that we approach for change. Community involvement, community engagement will be critical to the process. Again, we want the residents and the neighbors and the business owners to be a part of the change and not feel that they're being victims of it. We will be proactively working with those groups and organizations and residents to ensure that their input is felt. They can suggest the names. And so it's a community-wide process.
Yeah, you know, some of on the commission, they think that the name change should not be of a person. And if it is of a person, then the research needs to go in. Do you think that the name change should be of a person or should be of the area, the location?
I don't have a problem with it being named after a person. I think the criteria is that they have to be deceased 5 years or longer before consideration. Obviously, there's some research that will probably have to be done to ensure that we don't make the same mistake again, right, in terms of the modern context of where we are. Charlotte has so many individuals who has contributed to helping build this community, past and present, that at one day when we are fitting to honor them, it can be the name of the neighborhood itself. So I'm open to what's in the best interest of those residents and business owners who feel how they want to represent their community by a name or a figure or a place. I'm open to all that.
And what is your thought?
I agree with that. I think it should be left up to the residents who live there, the people who are impacted. So it's residents, businesses, whatever it is, they should be the ones that make the decision as what that change is. And if you do name it for an individual, you do need to have some kind of guideline so it's consistent from place to place to place that you do that. But I think it's just a great idea to get that community input.
Yeah, gotcha. Is there anything else you'd like to say? I guess, what else can we look forward to? I guess, is there anything other name changes? We all know schools are getting ready to be changed. Is there anything else that, you know, we need to look at?
I think everyone is taking a look at the man in the mirror, whether it's the school board or the city council or the state, in terms of what we can do to further advance our community so that everyone feels that they're a part of it, that you don't have to turn a corner and remember a history that that's bad or doesn't represent your community. And so I think everyone's working as hard as we can. Race and racism and discrimination, they're hard topics. I believe we have to create an environment, as I said earlier, where we create healthy tension, and then do what is right. Do what's right for our community, do what's right for our residents, and do what's right by history, right? That we don't be afraid to tell our history, as painful as it may be in some cases. Some cases, America and our community is just strong and bright, and we're all proud of it. But there's some things that we have to shake our heads at and say, I can't believe as a country that we did that or we allowed that to happen. And not be afraid to correct it when you see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you think about that? Do you feel?
I feel that we need to be aware and be open to discuss things that are happening and what we see are changes, and changes need to happen. We need to be open to discuss it. I like that I don't want to call it a movement, but I like the current atmosphere where people are willing to make changes and make sacrifices to do that what needs to be done to do the right thing. And that's what we all need to be open to. We need to be receptive. We need to, you know, value other people, value our neighbors, value the other people in the city. Just be open, receptive, listen, and then make changes and make good changes based on what we're hearing.
Yeah. And one thing I want to ask, you know, is this a black or white thing, you know, with the commission? I guess the commission is diverse. Do you see that white people are agreeing, or do you think that it's down the line?
You know, I don't know. I never looked at it that way, right? I look at it that people of goodwill, black, white, rich, old, young, black, white, you know, people would want to do what is right for people, right? To create an environment that that is safe, that's historically correct, and that we all can live and work together. And so I'm not sure. I took a poll of how white folks felt about it or how black folks felt about it. I think everybody I've been serving this community for some 18 years, want to create a better Charlotte, a Charlotte that's better tomorrow than it is today.
Yeah. Ms. Gasson, last question. Do you think that that the city leaders and that people are in charge, do you think that this momentum will continue? Or some people are concerned just because the space that we're in with the George Floyd, and it's been 1 year, that, you know, maybe 5 years or 6 years from now, that momentum will die down, and that, you know, they won't finish what was started. Do you have confidence that they will finish what they started?
I have confidence that it's going to finish what's been started, because the people who live here, who are moving here, who reside here for years, they're going to continue to have those changes. They're not going to let it go to the side. It's not going to be just a blip in time. It's going to be a continuous evolution, because our city is changing and we recognize that the city is changing. So we're going to keep changing gotcha. With the times.
And when they unveil that street name there on September 25th, what's going to go through your mind?
I'm going to be right there. I'm going to be right there, and I'm going to be happy that street is changing, because it's going to erase some negative history in Druid Hills. We want Druid Hills to be a great place where everybody feels comfortable and everybody is welcome to come and live there.
Gotcha. So more name changes to come, right?
Yep. One down, eight more to go.
There you go.
Thanks for listening to WBTV's Good Question, a podcast from On Your Side Tonight. Again, I'm Jamie Bowl. If you have a good question, email goodquestion@wbtv.com or use the hashtag OYSTonight on Twitter. You can watch On Your Side Tonight weeknights at 7:30 on WBTV. If you can't make 7:30, no problem. You can watch WBTV anytime on Roku, Amazon Fire, or Apple TV. WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jess Dyer. Special thanks to Dedrick Russell. From the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltosevich. Production coordinator is Taylor Robinson. And post-production supervisor, Jeremy Davis. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network Studios at Advent Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.